Hey everyone, it's Christian. I just wanted to thank you all so much for tuning in again. This is the third episode that Cole and I have done together, and we're having a blast doing it. We're really excited about the future of this show, where it's going, what we're going to do with it, and we're talking about starting a Patreon page, as well as getting an Etsy store going with some merch of like our logos and some of the like spoof logos and characters that we create during the show. So kick back, relax, and enjoy the latest episode of Film is About to Start.
Go ahead. Make my day.
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Hey, Stella!
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up!
And here we are again. Okay, so this week's episode is very, very different from last episode. I was going to say last week's, but I'm still editing the Batman because
we talked for a while.
It's 4 hours long.
Is it?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not
an hour longer than the movie.
No, jeez. It is really. It's long. I'm having to like really like, but I'm also having fun with it. But yeah, we talked for a lot.
Yeah, there were some. We kind of went back and like talked about things that we had started talking about earlier. That was a long conversation for sure.
Yeah, but that also is because I mean that's deep lore and like a lot of history there. But no, I had suggested to you, I think you, because you had picked the Batman for us to watch because it was out and you wanted to see it and
it seemed relevant,
right? And then I suggested to you, because it was on HBO Max, I was like, adaptation, because I haven't seen it in a long time,
right?
And I really want to do a bunch of, I love Nicolas Cage.
I like Nicolas Cage. I think as time goes by I start to appreciate him more and more. There's the whole thing about him, you know, doing a bunch of movies because he had, like, I think owed a bunch of money on taxes and stuff. But,
Please put your phone on silent.
Yeah, it's on silent. It just flashed. That's all. My screen lit up.
Something vibrated.
Oh, okay. but I don't dislike Nicolas Cage. And I'm just growing more and more fond of him as time goes by. I actually watched Matchstick Men, like, a week ago.
Okay, I was going to ask you, nobody's ever seen that movie.
Yeah, super bizarre, like kind of hidden gem, honestly. I had seen most of it, if not like maybe like half of it, when I was a kid. My mom just had it on TV, I think, at one point.
Really?
And yeah, and I remembered the plot for the most part, and I just really enjoyed watching it last week.
Yeah, I love that movie. I think it's Alison Lohman, Sam Rockwell's awesome. I love Sam Rockwell. Yeah. I don't know. Matchstick Men, for some reason, I think that I don't think I saw it in the theater. I think I saw it on DVD. And I remember seeing it because it was Ridley Scott directed it.
Yeah.
Which, and it's odd, like when you think of Ridley Scott's career, it's not something that's...
No, I think of Alien right away.
Right. Or Blade Runner or, Gladiator. But like, I love crime movies. And mm-hmm. that one's just a different, like, I love the whole con man. That world that Ridley Scott builds in that film.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Man, it starts off like right away, like them going into these conversations, and maybe we shouldn't talk about Matchstick Men.
Change the subject to Matchstick Men. Actually, no. Well, actually, you know what? This will be a dual episode. We can talk about Matchstick Men and adaptation.
It's a Nicolas Cage special.
Yeah. Why not? Nick Cage special. Cue theme.
Ooh. Does he have a theme?
He does now. No, I love Nicolas Cage. I don't know what it is, but like, he's so much fun to watch when he, because I think what's so much fun about him is like, you know, there's a lot, I'm not going to say who, but there's like this whole thing about actors who are older, don't care so much, do it for a paycheck.
Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah. And so with this though, I feel like Nicolas Cage really loves acting and performing. And every time he's doing it, I don't ever feel cheated. I don't ever feel like it's for a paycheck. I feel like it's because he loves to do it. And I read an article with him, I think it was Vanity Fair, where he was talking about why he wants to do all these movies.
What did he end up saying? Just that?
Kind of like when he was growing up, all these movies he would watch, he would see these regular guys and they would always show up and he would go to watch something for them. So he wanted to be like that kind of movie star.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, like, I prefer that that's his stance rather than just like, I got to make money. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so you just ran. Was Matchstick Men on HBO Max as well?
I think it was.
Everything you watch is on HBO Max.
Yeah, it's the easiest platform just to find. Like, not that Matchstick Men is like a 10 out of 10 film, but like good stuff.
I mean, it's pretty up there. I mean, not 10 out of 10, but I mean, it's pretty.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie. And I think like there's a big enough twist in there like that it leaves you thinking afterwards.
Spoiler alert. We're probably going to just reveal about Matchstick Men. But anyway,
Yeah, that's fair. But that's a spoilery podcast.
I just love the whole, like, one of the things I love about Nicolas Cage's performance is when he starts having that, like, breakdown with the pills and he's in the pharmacy.
Oh my God, he's screaming at everybody.
Have you ever been beaten until you've pissed blood?
Yeah, that's the line.
This is an emergency.
Hey, buddy, ever heard of a line?
Hey, have you ever been dragged to the sidewalk and beat until you pissed blood?
The editing in that movie is great, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is such a different film tonally than adaptation, though. And well, mostly, not necessarily tonally, but his character is so drastically different, or his characters are so drastically different.
Yeah. So, okay. So speaking of, all right, we'll go ahead and get into adaptation. We might come back to Matchstick Men later, but okay. I've only seen adaptation once. It was a long, long time ago, but I love like Charlie Kaufman's work. Are you familiar with a lot of Charlie Kaufman?
I have seen Being John Malkovich, and I think that's it. There's another big film that he wrote, right?
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, and I love that as well. It's funny that despite the fact that he wrote both of them, I was not really aware of his name. I guess it was like a recognizable name in a sense where it's like, I have heard that before. But when I first started watching the movie, I didn't realize that Nicolas Cage was playing the writer, playing Charlie Kaufman. So they say the name, I'm like, wait a minute. And then I get like about halfway into the film, I'm like, oh God, I see what's happening. And it was a very fun thing to kind of realize. And there was a lot of thoughts throughout the film.
Okay, when...
to be relatively vague.
I forgot about, like, the opening. I mean, it's great, but, like, there's a birth sequence.
Yeah,
I was like,
oh, okay, I'm seeing that right now. it opens up and there's a fox that's decaying and then being eaten by maggots. And then I think the next shot, honestly, might be the birth. And it is a straight-up shot, like, of a child being born.
Yeah, through the vaginal canal.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's science. It's not, no, we're not right. Children up here talking about movies.
That's a great
point. We talked about the Batman last week, but okay, we're adults talking.
Yeah.
Kaufman, you know, I mean, he wrote Being John Malkovich, which is so cool because that's really how it opens on that, like, behind-the-scenes footage.
Right.
And how Spike Jonze incorporated that because he directed that as well.
Yeah, and I thought that was really interesting because it's immediately, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm like, this is that movie. And then it makes it very clear, I think, like 30 seconds later when you see people walking around with the John Malkovich masks and everything. But like I said, I think Charlie Kaufman was a name that I just kind of heard and probably have seen a few times, but I didn't connect the two.
Okay.
And it wasn't, like I said, until like halfway through the movie that I really realized that, oh, this is based on a real person. And then after I was done watching it, I was like, I need to know what of this is real.
Yeah, so that's like one of the things that I like about the movie is I think that it's really cool how you don't, it really throws your like sense of reality out the window.
Right.
Because it's jumping between, because the whole story, like when I first saw it, I wasn't sure what to think of it. And then I did all the back, you know, the history of the film. And I really liked it when I first saw it. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say I really liked it. I was kind of but I was much younger and I was like, I'm not sure how I feel about this, whatever. But, I don't know, like, it really did kind of, I don't know, for me, like, this time viewing it, it really worked for me this time in a way that it didn't then.
Yeah.
I think this is something that gets better the second time you see it.
I think just, like, even taking a day after I watched it to kind of think about it really helped me as far as just enjoying it, which is so funny. I guess, like, you would think, like, the viewing experience is the experience, but it's the fact that it makes you think and, like, it was me realizing that the name adaptation is almost a pun in a sense. It's got two meanings. And I think that was really fun. I love that the movie is about flowers and all that stuff and about him trying to write a movie about flowers. But the thing isn't about the flowers adapting. It's about him adapting the book.
Mm-hmm. I like the thing. Oh, God. So, like, when the first thing that happens when he comes home, Charlie, and Donald is there. And you're like, wait, oh, what?
Right.
And then the performance, Nicolas Cage's performance as the brothers is...
It's great. I had read, I think it was it Spike Jonze that had said this? That Nicolas Cage, like, really invested in both of those characters and invested in them fully. Like, when he was Charlie, he was Charlie. When he was Don, he was Don. And there was no meeting in the middle there. Like, he really made those two separate characters despite the fact that, I mean, they're identical twins.
Mm-hmm. The stuff with Donald, though, like the character, just the polar opposites.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like comical how like they fit into these boxes of these archetypes, you know, like
right.
You've got the self-deprecating, like, and also Charlie Kaufman to write such a self-deprecating character. I think that's like so cool that he just was like, yeah, this is just, I'm going to write this way. And
yeah,
no, like for me, it's like no ego. What's like, I just think it's,
oh yeah.
And it makes for a better story.
Absolutely. Yeah. He wrote himself into the movie and did not like spice himself up at all.
He didn't Steven Seagal himself. In
oh my God. Yeah. What the, what two impossibly different people.
Many people consider me, you know, one of the great masters in my own field.
Yeah. So, okay. I was going to say like Charlie Kaufman, other stuff that he's done. And I think he directed this, Synecdoche, New York. Have you seen that?
No, I think I'd read about that just looking at stuff recently.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Okay.
We should do that. If you like Eternal Sunshine, and I mean, I take it. I mean, did you like adaptation?
Yeah, I really liked it. I think the first time through, I was like, okay, like it was very different from like the Batman and from Seven, where it wasn't like super like high level of excitement and action and all of that until like the final act. Mm-hmm. So it was a different thing. So I wasn't sure how to feel about it. It's not like you get to the end, and you're like, wow, what a sick movie. Like, wow, that was rad. No, you get to the end and it's like, okay, like that was really interesting.
Yeah.
And I think it was a fun watch. And I think looking back at some of the production and seeing how things were done and how people kind of perceived it at the time, or how like the people that the film was based on kind of handled that, mm-hmm. that's all super interesting.
Yeah, the writer of the actual book.
Yeah.
Like, there's a little like bit where she like, I don't think that she couldn't believe that she had like agreed to it, or I was glancing at that earlier because she was like, how could this be? But then she ended up loving the movie.
Right.
And loving Meryl Streep's performance because it's based off the character in the book, and it's, you know, and Meryl Streep's great always.
Yeah. Oh yeah. She was so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, what is her name? It's, something Orlean. What is the character's name?
Oh my
Or the
gosh.
Actual person's name.
The actual, yeah. Oh my
is it
gosh.
Diane Orlean. It's something Orlean.
Susan Orlean.
Susan Orlean. Yeah. So obviously like, Charlie Kaufman's writing a movie about her book, about her experiences talking to this guy that stole these orchids. She like read the script for the first time and was like, I don't want my name in this.
Yeah.
I don't want somebody playing this character. I don't want to become like this famous. It's too, she felt too vulnerable, I think. And then I want to say it was Spike Jonze, or it was somebody else that was part of the production that was like, Charlie Kaufman's in this too. Like the writer has put himself in this movie and the stuff that he's doing is like not as bad, really. I mean, her character's like having sex and doing drugs and stuff. But I think he said he's like, Charlie Kaufman's masturbating several times throughout the film.
I'm glad you brought up the masturbation.
I had to.
Elephant
in the room.
Gosh, everybody, it's so disturbing. Every woman that he has an encounter with, one of them, he has a sexual fantasy and masturbation scene about. And it's like, well, there's that.
Yeah.
Like, and his anxiety and panic attack. Oh my God. The first, that scene with at the beginning with Tilda Swinton, mm-hmm. when they're at the diner or at the cafe or
yeah,
I'm sweating. Restaurant.
She's going to see him sweating. She's looking at my hairline.
Oh my God.
Ugh.
It's so just like, that's one of the best. That's that just the way it opens on that. And I mean, Nicolas Cage, I mean, his performance, I think, is just so damn funny. Like when he's sitting there, and I can relate to this, though, as like trying to write scripts and things, when he's sitting down at that typewriter and he's trying to think about the ideas and he's like, coffee, I should get a coffee. Mm-hmm. Get a muffin, yeah. And a nut. And it's just like, I do think that it's nice to find like there's like all these like relatable things. And I do like that. I don't know, the character, for all his flaws and all of that, like you can find a little bit of yourself. I think everybody can find a little bit of themselves if they're honest about.
Oh, absolutely. I think we all doubt ourselves. And,
oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. And I think he's just so open about it. And I think it's really cool that this meta film exists where the whole film is about him writing this film. There's a really fun part like midway through the movie. It's like that turning point when he decides that he's going to introduce himself as a character. And that's the plot of his film. And then he's saying things, and then he's like, and my character says, and then he just does the exact same line again. It's really bizarre.
That's one of my favorite scenes. He's got the tape recorder, and he's going through, and he's looking at the legal pad, and he's like,
yeah. He records himself saying all this stuff, and then he grabs his notebook, and then it's like he's reading exactly what he had just said. I'd have to watch that scene again, but it was bizarre in a very fun way.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a very well-edited scene. And just like, yeah, again, the stuff, just the whole, like, commentary. I mean, it's like, it's so funny. It's because like creatives, like you've got to like be part of the Hollywood system and do it. But like at the same time, it's kind of funny how much they poke fun at it, even though they're a part of it in a way, because I don't know. It's just one of those things, just like the cliches in the film. It's just like the agent, I think, who's talking to him.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And he's like, yeah,
it's Ron Livingston, I think. Isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, everybody in that movie is based on a real character to some degree. The agent, like his name, I can't remember exactly what it was now, but that was the name of Charlie Kaufman's agent. Like he portrayed him as like, as the real guy.
Oh my God. That's, and okay. So I love Brian Cox. He's fantastic. And that Robert McKee, like the seminar.
Have you seen what that guy looks like?
No.
He looks just like Brian Cox.
Maybe I have, because that's a real book.
Yeah.
That, it's like so funny, because you're just like, where, what is the stance? How do you feel? Because it's like so easy to be, because like I feel like I very often have this conflicting dual identity within myself of pessimist and optimist. I feel like I try to be the more optimist, but like there's this always like this little, it's like a little angel and a demon on my shoulder. I feel like I've got pessimist here and optimism here, and they're like constantly battling, because like, whenever I'm trying to write something, I'm like, like fuck the conventions of this or that. And like, but I'll look at books sometimes because we all want to have some kind of like guide.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
you want to be original.
Yeah. And it's just so boring. It's like, oh, here, like Save the Cat. Have you heard of that book?
Yes. I'm trying to figure
out. I don't want to like rip on, but it was not for me. I'll just put it that way, because it was just like, I don't know. It was just ripping on certain movies and scripts that, like, this way I took it, and this was years ago, but yeah. I just didn't care for it.
Save the Cat. I'm going to have to just look that up.
No, okay. No. But I forget. Story is the name of this book or whatever. And I think I've heard people who, like, you know, talk about that, but it's just so funny to me that he ends up coming around and then trying to get his brother to write it. It's like, what is the method? Like, what is he saying here?
Right. Like, I was reading something. So, yeah, like 3/4 of the way into the movie, his brother, who is also writing a script, he asks him for help to basically make it an entertaining movie. And then I read that at that point in the film, everything else there is Donald Kaufman's movie. And that's why, like, you get like these long-winded monologues from Donald, and then you get these action sequences. You have people getting shot and running and car chases. You get all of the things that Charlie Kaufman at the beginning of the movie said that he didn't want to put in his movie. He didn't want those Hollywood cliches. And I think that's hilarious.
It is. Yeah. Because you step out of reality into fantasy at that point.
Yeah. And it's wild.
Just like, oh, and there's just like the little banter when he's like watching with the binoculars, watching Susan Orlean in her office in The New Yorker. One thing that got me physically upset.
Oh, no.
I really did. Like, I was getting there going, oh, God, is when he's on the elevator at the New Yorker and he goes up and it opens, the elevator door opens and he doesn't get off. And then it goes up, comes back down, and she gets on and he still does nothing. I was getting physically upset.
I feel that.
Because like, you're just like, get a backbone to this character. You just want to like, just shake him. Like,
There's so much awkward tension where you, and because I haven't seen it before, where you think he's just gonna say something. He keeps leaning in and like, it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't. She just goes away and he's like,
oh. I know. It's just like, it's so obnoxious in that way. But, well, I was going to say, I'm not going to say that. Hold on. Well, I thought one of like the good scenes, and I know it's because it's like, this is more like character. I mean, it's more like self-reflective and like an indie drama than what we've watched previously. But one of the things, it's like, again, it's that character, like, not making these moves and things, and the way it's just played out is when he's in the car with his, I guess, girlfriend. I mean, they don't really say that, but I mean, obviously that's their dating, Amelia, and he won't go in when she's like, come on, and he's like, no, I gotta get to the... And
it's, I'm just like the king of not seeing a vibe or getting a vibe from a woman. And I'm sitting there watching the whole time, being like, dude, come on, for the love of God.
That's the biggest vibe that's ever been out there in the world. But I feel you. I've been in that situation too before, where I'm like, I don't know what is happening. What is it? I make myself sound really good on this show.
Oh, yeah.
But well, I was gonna say we didn't talk about yet Chris Cooper in the,
as the orchid thief.
What is his name?
It's not an it's
LaRoche.
LaRoche. Yeah, say something like French.
Something French. He's fantastic. I don't know if you've seen a lot of Chris Cooper stuff.
I think I had seen him. He's in Bourne Identity, right?
Is he in that?
I think he's the guy that is basically like leading the hunt for Jason Bourne, if I'm not mistaken. But I haven't. I'm sure I've seen him in all sorts of things. He's got like one of those faces where.
Well, he's been in American Beauty.
Okay, and I haven't seen that in a long time.
Yeah, American Beauty's great. He's the neighbor. He's the military.
Yeah, it's been too long.
Spoiler alert, he's the one who shoots Kevin Spacey in the head after he kisses him. Remember?
It's been way
you
too long.
Block that out? Okay.
Yeah.
What else? I mean, yeah, he's in October Sky. He's in a lot. He's really great. He's a really great. So many other things. But yeah, I mean, like I really...
I mean, he won an Oscar for this role, right? I'm pretty sure he won like Best Supporting Actor.
I'm going to look that up.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the...
So we've just decided that we're going to change the idea of this show to bro films because, you know, I don't know our demographics. So we're going to do bro films. Nicolas Cage in Adaptation. What'd you think of it, brah?
Listen, dude, I don't know. Like, that movie is fine. Not enough action, not enough freaking car chases, dude. Gone in 60 Seconds, way better movie, dude.
Way better. And I mean, Angelina Jolie, friggin' hot.
Yeah, dude, she's friggin' hot, bro. And you ever seen, what is it, Ghost Rider? Even more action.
He fucking pisses fire in that movie, brah.
Yeah, it's freaking rad, brah.
It's not like Adaptation where he's like, oh, let me think about my internal monologue and my thoughts, brah. I just want to see him shoot stuff, brah.
Yeah, dude, like, him being, like, all self-deprecating and all that, dude, I just, no time. Confidence is key, brother.
Yeah, confidence is key. Like, dropping out of a fucking plane, like, in Con Air, flying it and blowing your long walks in the wind, man. Fucking A, brah. Okay, yeah, that's actually coming soon. That'll be the next series that we do, Jesus. Bro films. Like, oh, subscribe, and comment, and surf's up, dude. But anyway, so back to actually talking about the movie, Spike Jonze. I think he's such an interesting dude. I've always really liked his work. You know, Being John Malkovich is awesome. I think that movie's freaking amazing. Like, I just rewatched it last year and forgot about like how much I just love it. The idea.
I was forced to watch it in college for like a film class that I'd taken and I'd never heard of it. I'd seen John Malkovich, I think, only in Con Air before then. And I have such a deep respect for him just for letting that movie exist. I love Being John Malkovich. What a bizarre film. So
I thought you were talking about Con Air, like that movie existing. And I was like, because John Malkovich says Con Air exists?
No, I love
that's Being John Malkovich. Okay, just side note. Con Air's got the most awkward fight in any movie I've ever seen.
I've seen it one time, and I think I was like 12.
They fight in the, like, I don't know, under the plane or whatever that crawl space of the plane, whatever you call that.
Yeah, like the cargo hold.
Yeah,
or something.
Sure, whatever. But it's like, it's bro films, bro.
Yeah, it dude, shut up about cargo.
Shut up, man.
The only cargo I get is shorts, brother.
Flip-flop, polos, and cargos, bro. And Bud Light.
Oh, dude.
No, not
Give
Bud
me a freaking
Light.
Coors, no, brother. Freaking,
yeah, Coors, man, bro.
Someone's gonna be drinking a Coors listening to this and be like, God, are you kidding me?
I'm gonna go and kill them, brah. I'm gonna go punch them in the face, brah. Oh my God. Okay, no, anyway, yeah, they're in the car. Cargo hold. And they're like, they have to like duck down. So they fight like.
Hunched over?
Yeah, it's really weird. You gotta look this. Yeah, you gotta look this up after we record. Anyway, so Spike Jonze' career. Anyway, you were saying, what'd you say?
Oh, just that I really appreciate John Malkovich for letting that movie exist. I think it's very cool. But the whole thing about Adaptation is he's adapting this film or adapting this book for a film. And the book is about this woman's journey, like with this guy who's stealing flowers. I don't understand why this film studio thought the guy who brought us Being John Malkovich should write a film about that. About this real event. I can't imagine what was going through their head and what they expected to get.
I can't either. So, like, and one of the things I was looking at in, like, the notes and things, like, the trivia and things about it, apparently, like, it dated back to like 1994. The film rights were purchased by Fox 2000 in 1997, and then they sold them to Jonathan Demme, who directed Silence of the Lambs.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then
why? Yeah, that's also bizarre to me.
He said, well, I mean, he did. I mean, have you ever seen Rachel Getting Married?
Mm-mm.
He directed that movie. So, I mean, Jonathan Demme's done like other things that aren't like, he's not like everything is like, you know, Sons of Lambs or like
yeah.
Thriller oriented. But yeah, still, I don't know. Like, and then he set it, the project up at Columbia Pictures, which Columbia ended up, you know, making the film. But Kaufman was hired to write the script. And like was having like all this, and that's true about this, like the whole writer's block of the adaptation of what is this story? Like, what do I do with this?
Right. And I think that's so cool that the movie ends up being about him being like so worried about being able to make this movie happen and that he just writes himself into it. And then the movie shows him writing himself into it.
I mean, that's the one thing I love about this movie is that there is no other movie like this.
I can't think of anything that's so specifically like a meta.
No, except for The Matrix Resurrections.
We don't talk about it.
Did you watch that?
I did, man. I love The Matrix, too. Especially, like, the first one. Like, I don't know how I feel about the sequels, just generally.
Yeah.
But they're still fun, and they still kind of immerse you in The Matrix.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking for months, like, how excited I was to see this new movie. And then I watched it, and I was kind of blown away by how much I didn't care for it.
I was too. I'll be honest with you. Like, I love the first Matrix. When they did an IMAX thing recently, like when they were right before Resurrections came out, and I went and saw it in IMAX,
and it
was that first movie to this day. Like, I forgot how much I love it. And watching it like that, because like I've seen that. I saw that movie when I was a kid, like when it first came out and everything. And I've just, you know, it's always been part of my
yeah. I remember being super, super young and seeing my parents watching it and just seeing the scene where it's like they're sitting in like what is essentially looks like purgatory, just the white backgrounds. Morpheus is sitting in the chair, and it's just like it's just burned into my mind. And I love The Matrix.
Yeah, I do too. And that is a kind of a meta movie. So, I mean, I was excited about where they were going with that one. But maybe we might have to just do a whole Matrix, like maybe do one episode where we talk about all four, because I kind of feel the same way.
I would love to. I will say, like, just to say one more thing about Resurrections, is that there was a scene, and I watched the movie with subtitles on. I like watching with subtitles. It gives me, I get
you
all
are
the,
a subtitle person?
Yeah.
I can't watch a movie that's in English in subtitles. It drives me insane.
I think, to some degree, I just don't even, I don't even think about it.
Interesting.
But it's nice because I get all of the information. I'm never having to ask, like, what did they say or anything. And so, just without thinking, I watched it with subtitles. I had no problems with the experience itself, except for the fact that I didn't like the movie. I saw a video on, I think, Twitter or Facebook within like a week or so of watching it. And the video clip just says, "What are they saying? And are they speaking English?" And I watched the clip. I had just seen the movie. No idea what the character said. Like, it absolutely just sounds like nonsense. Because I saw it with subtitles, I was fine.
What part is this?
I want to say it's the, I can't remember the character's names just because I really did not, I didn't absorb too much from it after watching it, but it's the one of the new characters that are introduced. I think it's like as soon as she's talking about like the Matrix and all that stuff and just like the science behind what they're doing, whatever she's saying just does not sound like actual words.
Oh my gosh. Are you talking about the Jada Pinkett Smith character when they're in, when?
I don't think so. I want to say it's earlier in the movie. I wish I could remember the character's name or the actor's name.
Something that's there. I don't know. They were describing something about a strawberry at one point, and I went, okay.
Oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And they're like, there's a nano thing, the technology, got it.
They're just, they spend like 15 minutes talking about how excited they are to have strawberries.
I just really wanted to see, I thought that we were going to, honestly, I'm disappointed. I thought we were going to see like Neo look like Neo, but he didn't. He just looked like John Wick. And I was
he
like,
looks like Keanu Reeves has for the last like 8 years.
You know what we have to talk about at some point? I just rewatched it. We have got to talk about Constantine.
Dude, I haven't seen Constantine in so long. I liked that movie when it came out, though.
That movie is, it, I mean, I see it gets a lot of love now, and there's like a cult following for it. That's, I love that movie. I know it's not an exact adaptation.
Yeah, I wasn't aware.
yeah, got it. Got him. Back to adaptation. Yeah, no, I think it's really fascinating. I think it's really like a, like, just a really interesting movie. And the way that the time, again, like I'm obsessed with the way that time is handled in movies, because it's the only medium that you can do this in. I mean, obviously you can jump around in timelines in books, but to actually show time happening, you can only do that. You can't do that in a play. I mean, you can sort of, but I mean, everybody.
Yeah, you're not going to buy into it as much.
Right. And just the way that it's present day, past, present, past, like constantly like cutting in between these two timelines.
Right.
And then it's like you said, it's like it gets hijacked by Donald when it all comes.
Yeah, we finally like find ourselves with both timelines in the present. And yeah, and the film just changes entirely from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's something you realize right away that it's changed. And it's really cool.
Mm-hmm. So Nicolas Cage's prosthetic.
His like chest.
Stomach, chest situation.
Torso, yeah.
Yeah, it's. I just think it's so funny that you have this character that like has this like look. And you've got one character that's so like, ugh, about it. And then the other one, it doesn't faze him at all.
Super confident.
Yeah.
Well, and I think Charlie at some point in the movie says like, oh, women want like, maybe I should be confident or something, but that's what women want, right? And he's like, but I'll still be ugly. It's like, damn, dude.
He's like, I'll still be ugly, but that's okay. Because since the beginning, he's like, that's okay, because men can be ugly. He's like, that's not true, though.
Yeah.
He's just like in his own head going on and on about this stuff. But, all right, so Spike Jonze, we were talking about Being John Malkovich earlier and his career. Where the Wild Things Are, did you ever see that?
Yeah, I think I saw it in theaters. I read the like children's book when I was a kid and I loved the art. I remember going to Barnes & Noble and seeing like all the puppets and stuff that they used to sell. It was cool. Really liked the kind of the style and all that, but I did not care for that movie a whole lot.
Really?
I think I should watch it again. I was probably like 15 or 16 when it came out. Like just at that age where it was like, I'm a little too old to appreciate this from like as a kid and I'm too young to appreciate it as like an adult.
Yeah, I gotta get you. Yeah, I've seen it one time. I would like to see it again. I mean, I do think that the special effects were really cool what they did and how they like did the puppets and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think when I saw it, I just couldn't appreciate that in the same way that I can now. I couldn't appreciate the production more than it was just a viewing experience.
And have you seen Her?
Love Her.
Yeah.
Her is so good.
Her and Being John Malkovich are my two favorite Spike Jonze films.
Yeah. I need to watch Her again because I haven't seen it since 2015, 2014.
That movie is really, I think the cinematography is really beautiful in that thing. And I just like, I mean, I'm a huge Joaquin Phoenix fan and I love everything that he does in that movie. I don't know. I think it's a perfect movie. I can't think of anything I would change.
No, the performances are so great. So much so that you and yourself kind of fall in love with this AI thing. You can understand fully why he's invested himself so much in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's so heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. That's the theme of Spike Jonze and Charlie Kaufman. It's just heartache and breakup and just sadness.
Yeah, it's this kind of like emptiness. It's not hopeful in any way. It's just kind of, I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know how you would refer to it besides just being kind of depressing, but like in a very interesting way.
I mean, it's like it's that whole thing of like you're feeling things. It's helping you feel. I mean, that's the whole thing of like sad music sometimes. I was thinking about this recently. It's like sad music is so great because it is so like, obviously, well, it's like you've got like, it's almost like somebody with like, think about like bipolar disorder. We have these two like ends of each spectrum. I hope this is right what I'm saying, but you have like high highs and low lows. So it's like music, it's like super optimistic or it's like really depressing. And it's like, there's just like this, I don't know. It's obviously like these really intense feelings that you're having. And I think a lot of like actors definitely feel that way.
It's for sure. And yeah, in a lot of these movies, like they mix in comedy in a way where it works, where it doesn't feel forced in any way. It's very natural. Like you're feeling for these people that are living kind of sad lives, sad existences. And I think just it's like I ironic humor pretty much through and through. Like any moment that makes you laugh, it's like you're kind of laughing. I don't know, not at anyone's expense or at anyone's expense, but just like, I don't know, it's just so uncomfortable. All these movies. Being John Malkovich has so many awkward moments, especially because you're watching him live through somebody else's life, through his eyes, and that's all bizarre. And you're watching this like other meta film through adaptation where Charlie Kaufman has written himself into the film as this character that is referring to himself as being gross and fat and a slob and all these horrible things. Mm-hmm. Yet they're still, like, honestly pretty funny.
Oh, I mean, the movie is hilarious. Like, I think that, like, the internal monologue of Charlie Kaufman is just one of the funniest things I've ever. I don't know. It makes me laugh so hard. Like I said, like, I was getting upset with his character at one point, but, like, again, that's also a testament. It's like the writing is really is great, but it's also just a testament to how great Nicolas Cage's performance is.
Yeah. I think the reason you had that reaction is because you feel him as a real person.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't feel like some sort of exaggerated character, which is funny because Nicolas Cage so often plays those characters. Mm-hmm. These, like, absurd, loud people. And this time he's kind of this, like, relatively somber, soft-spoken person that it just hates themselves.
I think that there's, like, I feel like there's this in-between. I feel like that Nicolas Cage was able to, like, do these characters so well because he is a bit of both of them.
Oh, for sure.
I think a lot of people probably are.
Right. I think on my worst days, I can see myself in Charlie. Yeah. And on my best days, I can definitely see myself in Donald. Like,
right.
I don't know that I'll ever have his confidence, really. I mean, that's
Donald confidence is, maybe it's just having the name Donald just gives you confidence when you shouldn't have any. I mean, I can think of a couple other Donalds.
I don't know why my brain immediately went to the duck. I'm like, he's not that confident. Vaney's kind of grumpy.
No, I don't think Donald Duck is that confident. I don't know. He's like, he's got an anger issue, but I mean, maybe he is confident, but I don't know.
That's funny.
But there's another, yeah.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I don't know why my brain is like, nah, dude, the duck.
Wrong. If you enjoy this podcast, you can check out Dawn in the Morning, which is also done by one of the hosts of this show. It's a really great comedy sketch. Anyway, self-plugging. That's the sponsor this week. Dawn in the Morning. Go check it out wherever you get podcasts. That's so fucking stupid. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, but Spike Jonze, the other thing that's so funny about, like, him, like, as his career, too, is the Jackass movies. Like, he produces all of those and he's in them too.
He's a co-creator for the series, which I had no idea was a thing. I knew, like, he had done a few, like, music videos and things, but I didn't know that he was so heavily involved with, like, the kind of the skateboarding world and then Jackass.
Oh yeah.
Like, he owns, or at least, like, helps found, like, girl skateboards.
Mm-hmm.
That was wild. I had no idea. It was like, I never had a girl branded skateboard as a kid, but I had friends who did.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it was something I was so aware of that it was wild to realize that that's the same guy that's directed a few movies that I really love.
Well, that's what I've always loved about Spike Jonze. Is one of the things is that, like, I always liked him because I always liked these artsy films and things like that. But, like, kind of where I grew up, like, skateboarding was kind of, like, looked down, like, on.
Oh, for sure.
I know a lot of people do, but I mean, there's a lot of cultures that don't look down on it, and a lot of, like, places they don't. And so I thought it was really cool. I always liked him because I was like, yeah, that's one of my many things in my personality. I love skateboarding and things. And so I just love that because he's just, I feel like he really is just true to himself and true to who he is, because you have all of these films that you don't think the guy who would produce Jackass, which I love Jackass.
Oh, yeah. It's super fun and entertaining, but very different.
Right.
And yeah, I was reading the Roger Ebert review of Adaptation, and he, like, really enjoyed the film and had a lot of respect for Spike Jonze. But at the top of the review, he notes that Spike Jonze, who is more known for music videos and skateboarding videos, has, like, done it again, like, blah blah blah. Blah. And it was really interesting because I wasn't aware of those things really. I think I'd seen one music video that he directed, but I thought that was, like, a one-off thing.
I think he did some Radiohead.
That sounds right.
I think he did. I'm more familiar. I just can't think of it off the top of my head, but I've been a fan. But I did write down one of my favorites, and I saw this years ago. It's one of his shorts. I think it's, like, a little over 30 minutes or right at 30 minutes, but you can get it on YouTube, and it's called I'm Here, directed by him, and it stars Andrew Garfield in the role, but he's playing a robot. So his head's always, like, it's just, he has, like, a PC face. So it's like, and then he, like, meets a female robot. Like, he's, like, extremely unhappy until he meets this female robot, and then drama stuff. It's really,
I'm Here,
beautiful and, like, sad and, but also happy.
I'm gonna have to check this out. That sounds cool.
It's really good. It's really, really good. You just go on YouTube and you just put in I'm Here, Spike Jonze, and it should pop up.
Okay.
I can't can't think of anybody that I know that's like, oh, I've seen Adaptation.
I've never heard anybody talk about it. It's Mm-mm. something that I'm not even sure how I was aware of it. I think somehow, somewhere, I saw a video, like a clip of it, where it just basically showed that Nicolas Cage was playing twins. And I was like, that's hilarious. Like, that's interesting. I want to see that movie. I haven't seen him do that. And that's, I think, why it was always kind of in the back of my mind as something I wanted to watch, because I thought it was just bizarre.
Well, I was thinking about, like, with Adaptation, one of the cool things, and we were talking about, like, the meta stuff, I think what's really great is, now, in his filmography, this is the movie that he did immediately after Being John Malkovich.
Right. That's why I said I was, like, so surprised that anyone would get him to be the person who would write this. Are you talking about Spike Jonze or Charlie Kaufman?
Spike Jonze directed. Oh. This was the movie I'm pretty sure. Hold on.
I think you're right, because I don't think he had directed too many films.
No, like, Being John Malkovich was his first movie. And.
Yeah, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. When did that come out?
That would be, I think, 2002.
2002? Was that. Now I'm just like getting myself mixed up between Charlie Kaufman and Spike Jonze. Was that directed by Spike Jonze or just written by Charlie Kaufman?
No, that was directed by a French director.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds right. Because I want to say that Spike Jonze has a pretty big gap in his filmography between films at some point. Like, maybe it's right after Adaptation. There might be like maybe 5 to 9 years. I'm trying to remember. Maybe it was 7. There seems to be a pretty large gap. Like, he wasn't directing too many films. Despite the fact that the ones he has directed have been pretty big.
Spike Jonze?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, John Malkovich was, and then he did like a short, but like it was John Malkovich, and then the next thing he did was Adaptation.
Damn.
So that's what's like cool is like, so how meta, how they bring in like how he's on the set of Being John Malkovich, and it's like, I mean, that's only a couple years though. I mean, because John Malkovich came out in 1999 and Adaptation came out in 2002, which this movie's 20 years old now.
Oh, don't say that. I didn't even think about the fact that 2002.
I couldn't believe when I was like last night when I like popped off the screen and it went back to like the little HBO Max thing. And it was like 2002. And I went, this movie is 20 years old. When I was a child, Star Wars was 20 years old. And I was super, I was like, oh my God, this is insane. Like, how was Star Wars 20 years old when I'm little and now this is 20 years old? And I'm like, what in the hell? Like, see, again, the whole time obsession thing with film and stories and time. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, time is the thing that freaks me out the most.
Time is the ultimate villain. It's the bane of my existence. No. Do you remember the weapon of choice, Fatboy Slim music?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Christopher Walken? Yeah.
Spike Jonze directed that.
That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a cool music video.
Yeah. Directing wise, his films, yeah, it's just Where the Wild Things Are, and then...
Maybe that's what it was. I think between it's Adaptation and then Where the Wild Things Are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then...
I mean, that's wild, because he's such a fantastic filmmaker, but I mean, like, you know, I mean, Kubrick was the same. Stanley Kubrick didn't direct a bunch of films. Like, he would take long gaps in between things. But he always is working. He's always making music videos and doing things like that. But I mean, the last movie he did was Her.
Yeah, and what, has it been like 8 years now?
That was 2013.
2013, so nine.
So yeah, 9 years ago.
Man.
Her is 9 years old. That's crazy too. I would love to see. I hope Spike Jonze does something again. But I mean, he's been like doing these, like, he did Aziz Ansari, like his comedy special, and then this Beastie Boy story. It was a 2-hour Apple TV Plus thing. So yeah, I don't know. I hope he'll do another narrative soon. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I feel like he's definitely due for one. I know he's like obviously still on attached to like the Jackass properties and stuff, but that I can't imagine like he's doing too much on that besides producing.
Well, the funny thing was, I think he did, because I went and saw Forever. Did you?
No, I wanted to. I don't even think it's in theaters anymore, but it's also not streaming on anything yet. That's the worst thing about like the time we're in now.
The limbo.
There is this weird limbo period where it's like,
what do you mean now? Like, that's the way it always was. No,
it's
was,
more
though.
That things are so readily accessible now that it's that limbo worse. Period is worse. Yeah. It doesn't feel like it should exist anymore.
I get you. That's the weirdest thing. I went online and I was looking because I was like, okay, what special edition am I going to order of the Batman? What steelbook am I going to get for this? And I'm looking online and I'm like, when does this come out?
You're like, this has been in theaters for 4 days.
Yeah. And so they're like, coming to HBO Max streaming in April. And I'm like, well, that's stupid. Why would they bring it that soon? Like 45 days is all they're going to give it in the theater. I'm like, well, that's, they're missing out. So I'm like, well, maybe the Blu-ray will be right. They're like, no, it's July maybe. And I'm like, that's not even that long. Back in the day, it'd be like, you have to wait like a year for a movie to come out. But like, I'm still thinking, if you're going to make it available on streaming, why are you waiting until June or July?
It might be like special features amongst other things.
Maybe. But also, I do think back in the day it was give it this long window in a theater, which I did like, because like the theater experience is the best experience. And especially for, you know, a movie like that, like.
Right. And I think the theater was like the most accessible way for anyone to see a movie back, like at certain points in time, for sure. But yeah, it's bizarre to me, like. There, for the most part, it feels like there's such a short window of time for movies to go from theater to streaming services. Mm-hmm. So anytime there's a wait, it's like, damn, like.
It does feel like much longer than it used to. And that's the crazy thing. It's just there's so much things that just like get caught up in that. And like, I mean, and another thing is like physical media is just like going away, which is fine. I used to collect movies a lot. And now that it's just kind of gone away, it doesn't bother me so much. But it's kind of one of those things where it's like. Just if you make it available to people in some form or fashion so that they can like watch these movies in another date, like if they love it.
Yeah.
And if they, you know, like just you don't have to, because the average Joe is not going out and buying all the movies that are coming out. They're not buying movies like last year's The Father with Anthony Hopkins, which I would love to have like a Blu-ray of, which I think you can get like that stuff on Amazon. But like, if you're going to make these things, I just want, it's kind of like vinyl, like what the Criterion does, just make these things feel more.
Right. And I think, you know, the reality is that DVDs are kind of becoming just very similar to vinyl in that aspect, where it's this kind of niche thing. Mm-hmm. It's for enthusiasts, really. Like, but I don't think most people are buying DVDs at all. I couldn't tell you the last time I bought one. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I bought one in the last 8 years.
Oh, really?
Like, I really don't know the last movie that I would have purchased physically. Like, it was probably like a $5 like movie bin thing from like Walmart or something, and I haven't done that in a long time.
Wow. I do remember in the early days when that started, the $5 bin to dig through that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I don't, for me more it's like about preservation and like finding the best version, because like even though streaming can look really good, there it can't compare, like if I look at like a 4K Blu-ray.
No, and that's so true. I think DVD, like the standard, like non-HD formatting is just a thing of the past for sure. Oh, obviously, gosh. The quality isn't there.
DVDs look like they look so bad on a 4K TV. I mean, it's just, I don't have many. I have like, I got rid of, I took them to Goodwill, actually. I just took a bunch of DVDs and just dropped them off at Goodwill. But like, even Blu-ray is starting to like, it looks fine. But like, if I watch it on my 4K TV, I'm like, ooh, that looks right. Blurry, but then I put a 4K in and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. I think that's the issue, is that technology has advanced so much in the last like 30 years that we've gone from VHS to DVD to HD DVD to Blu-ray to 4K Blu-ray. And it's just, I don't think people are as interested in trying to keep up. I mean, my mom had a VHS collection that was like hundreds of movies. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of transitioned into a couple shelves on the same bookcase were DVDs. And then I think eventually, like, she just got fed up with owning DVDs kind of generally. And then I ended up with a bunch of them. And, yeah, I don't know. I think she gets a few of them from time to time, but it's definitely not what it was.
Oh, my God. My dad used to collect VHS tapes when I was a kid. And he had so many. And he would order them. He was, like, friends with people at the video store. And he would, like, order, like, really, like, special Universal Monster movies and things like that, because they did those. So we would watch those. But, like, yeah, I was always shown, like, you know, Monty Python and the Holy Grail when I was a kid and things like that on video.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, we always, like, he was just a super big film nut. So, like, and then he got into DVDs. And I do still have a bunch of his old, like, DVDs and things like that I kept, because he's, you know, he passed away. So I wanted to keep some of his things, but not all of them. Yeah, I mean, he just loved movies. But, like, I've gotten to the point, and I think it was because of, like, moving around so much and everything, that, like, it really started to just get exhausting having to carry stuff. And so I have it now to where it's just, like, Directors, Criterion, and, like, maybe a few, like, random.
Yeah, just stuff that's, like, yeah, stuff that you really want, or things that are interesting enough to have. And you've also got a few that are, like, I think, like, the Dark Knight trilogy, that are, like, almost like art pieces. They're, like, these display pieces.
I mean, we're not done with, I mean, I guess we're done with this episode. I mean, like, I've kind of said all that I need to say on adaptation. Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, I think it's a really interesting film. I think if you watch it, give it a day and, I don't know, kind of process it. It was not something that I immediately loved. I didn't dislike it. It just, I think the more I kind of sat and thought about it, the more I was able to appreciate it. Mm. Very interesting movie. I've never seen something that was such a meta, like, self-aware film.
Except for The Matrix Resurrections.
Except for that. We don't talk about that. But I think it's a very interesting watch. If you want to watch Nicolas Cage play a character unlike anything I've seen him play, you should check it out.
Yeah, agreed. How would you rate the film?
I'd give it a 7. 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10.
I think it's incredibly well written, very well edited. It's just, it's not a spectacle.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree. It's not a spectacle, but I mean, I would give it a 7, maybe a 7.5.
Yeah, and I think maybe a 7.5. I might even push it to an 8. Like I said, I think after spending some time, that 7 was something that, like, I set concrete once I'd watched the film.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's changed. It's I've adapted since then.
Oh, I see what you did.
Yeah, yeah,
you like that? That's very clever.
I think
a 7 out of 10. I mean, that's still, like, it's not like giving it a 4. I do think a 7 is, like, a good rating for a movie. Most movies, I would rate it a 7.
Yeah, I think like, even like a 5 out of 10, like, that sounds like a failing grade. I feel like a 5 is, like, the most standard movie. Like, it's either something that you might watch again or might not ever, but it's not something that's, like, that's hurt you in any way.
Like, 5 to me is, like, a romantic comedy.
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of like, you know, you watch it and it might have been entertaining, but it's not something you walk away thinking about maybe ever again. 5 is, like, I think the standard run-of-the-mill film.
What's your favorite 5 romantic comedy?
13 Going on 30? I don't know.
Wow, okay.
I love that movie, though.
No,
I would give that, like an 8. Not really. I can't even give it an 8. I'd give it a 6, now, realistically, but...
13 Going on 30 is what caused you to want to be an actor.
Oh, yeah, dude. I was like, Mark Ruffalo, that's the best I'm ever going to be.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I do like that movie actually a lot. I do. I had a huge crush on Jennifer Garner.
Yeah, that's
probably why I watched it so much. But no, I do like that movie a lot. And but I'm trying to think, like, rom-com. Now I'm gonna, like, go, what's my favorite? You were so fast with that I don't think that I can meet that.
No, that's fair. But I was.
How was that so fast?
Because I know that I love that movie. I'm not fucking around with that.
I can't think of a romantic comedy. I can't think. Maybe that's the problem. I don't know.
You need to watch, like, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days or something.
I know. I liked Hitch back in the day.
I haven't seen Hitch since it came out.
I haven't either, but I remember liking it. Oh, no. I think I hate romantic comedies.
The romantic comedies are, like, a genre that... I think they're just an easy watch.
Rom-com.
It's a shame.
I can't. There was Marry Me that just came out with Jennifer Lopez, and wow.
I would like to see that, not because I'm like...
Yeah, of course you would. Yeah,
yeah, I know, right? I'm, like, setting myself up as being, like, the rom-com
like
guy.
Like rom-coms.
No, rom-coms are nice. They make me feel better. No, there's a hopefulness to them, I think.
Love Actually. Okay, I forget. That's a rom-com.
Yeah.
But it's, like, a depressing British rom-com.
That's a bit different.
But I like it. I do think Love Actually is a good movie. What movie are you feeling? So you're going to pick. So have you thought about what you're going to pick?
Wait, first? I'm going to pick for
yeah,
the...
Yeah, you have to pick next week.
I picked... Wait, oh, shit,
no,
you're right.
You picked, yeah.
I thought we settled on...
No, I'm not picking every time. I picked Adaptation. What do we choose? Oh, Under the Silver Lake.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
I was so... Like,
you're supposed to pick the movie.
Well, if we naturally come to one, I think that works.
Okay, well, that's fine. All right, yeah, Under the Silver Lake. I just watched it not too long ago. So you're going to have to track it down.
I'll figure it out.
Okay.
I got Amazon Prime. I can rent it for $4.99 or something. It's going to end up being like 30 bucks. Like, damn it.
30 bucks to rent a movie on Amazon Prime. It's inflation, man.
$30 is clearly an exaggeration, but there's, what is that movie called? It's, I think, Stay Alive. Is that what it is?
What?
It's like a 2003, 2004 movie about a video game.
Horror movie.
Yes.
I can see the cover.
Yeah.
Somebody's hands holding like a bloody PlayStation controller.
Yep. And it's like they die in the game. They die in real life. And
you
watch
the movie, you want to kill yourself.
Right. Yeah, that's why. But I went to look that movie up recently because I never saw it. I was too young at the time. And now I'm like, I can just watch whatever. It was like $12, $13 to rent on Amazon. And I was like, there's not a chance.
$12 or $13 to rent on Amazon?
Yeah.
I think I remember that movie coming out in the theater for like a weekend.
Yeah, I think it's like Frankie Muniz and some other people. I don't know.
We will talk a little bit more about weird times in film history on next time. I'm going to say next times because that sounds good. Next time's episode. There's no weeks.
No,
I don't know. I don't know what the schedule is. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what this is. It's just we're figuring it out. So we hope you enjoy. We want to thank you for listening. And yeah, we're going to be doing some fun stuff with the show continuing. But thanks for sticking with us if you have, because we're still trying to figure out everything.
Yeah, my point is being made. Catch me get bullied next time. See you later.